Support for Impact Cincinnati comes from Murray and Robin Sinclair.
Good morning. This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. It's been a rough year for lawns and gardens. The high heat and drought have taken their toll on everything from your flowers and vegetables to your landscaping and trees. This morning, we're going to talk about what you can do the rest of the summer and into the fall to finish out this growing season and get ready for the next. Joining me, are neighborhood garden coordinator for the Civic Garden Center of Greater Cincinnati, Peter Huntinger, and Campbell County Extension agent for horticulture, David Kester. You can join in the conversation, email your questions to impact@wvxu.org, or post them on our Facebook page. Good morning.
Good morning, Mary.
Before we get started, I want to let everyone know that we tend to get a lot of questions, especially on this topic, right at the end of the show, and then we can't get to them. So if you have a question, get it in right away, impact@wvxu.org or on our Facebook page. That's 91.7 WVXU. So it's been just a great year and everything's lovely, right?
I wish.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the weather. We're dealing with a drought. What's that doing to the entire region?
Well, it's making a lot of our, you know, Peter and I both work with some commercial growers who work in neighborhood gardens who they're producing vegetables, obviously, for sale. And these people have had to irrigate, obviously, the entire summer to get any kind of yields. And it's been really tough. And I'm hoping I brought some rain with me or to the area when I came. And we'll get a break for those people today and they'll get able to not have to irrigate as much as they have been.
Peter?
Yeah, and I agree with David. I mean, this dry June has really had a very negative impact, and I think that particularly people with larger numbers of plants are hit a little bit harder with the market gardens and with the pantry gardens as opposed to the community gardeners, which may have a smaller plot that's anywhere from 4 by 8 feet to 10 by 20. But even there, we're feeling the impact. What happened also is because it was dry in June, if people really didn't keep up with watering, a lot of the plants didn't develop the appropriate root networks. So then even when you're watering them, they're struggling and become under stress, and which now is really affecting the health of the plant and the productivity.
Well, let's talk about lawns first. Should you just give up at this point? What should you do?
You really need to be evaluating and taking a look at your lawn, seeing what's out there. If it's mainly weeds, this is actually the best time of the year coming up at the end of August to renovate your yard, to reseed it, to really make some determination on which way you should go, whether you should redo the entire thing or work with what's there. And now the coming up is when we want to do that, the end of August, September. Gives us the best opportunity for new seeding of lawn grasses.
I actually heard from some friends on Facebook who said they've just let their lawn go to weeds because at least that's green. And is that and it was not a funny comment. I mean, they were very serious. Is that a good thing to do at this point, just let the weeds take over?
I would definitely not let them go to seed. I mean, you still want to keep mowing, raise your mower height, obviously, but you really want to keep those weeds from going to seed, because if they go to seed, you are just going to be battling those same weeds for years to come. So try to keep that grass cut and keep the weeds from seeding. And if you don't cut, you are going to have weeds. The grass won't go to seed, but the weeds certainly will, and you will fight them.
I think raising your blade to 3 inches is really crucial, and to use a mulching mower. And then what that does is if you go out there and you cut the grass really short, I mean, it's not shading the ground, so it increases the evaporation of moisture from the soil. The taller the grass, it's shading. And I think that's really singly probably the most important thing to do to try and preserve your lawn. You know, there's some people too are looking at more like polyculture lawns.
What's that mean?
Well, multiple plants, types of grasses and things. And it depends. In some neighborhoods, it wouldn't be tolerated, but where at home, we no longer use straight grass mixes. We use a horse pasture mix, which has clovers and different varieties of fescue in it. And it produces a nice lawn, and it's much more drought resistant. But if you want that perfect carpet, it's not going to give it. Another advantage to work using clovers in your garden, your yards too, is that it's a insect forage, and particularly the white clover, the bees really, honeybees really go for. So there's some ecological reasons to think differently about lawns.
Marianne, it's not, you know, Peter and I were talking, it hasn't just been the drought, but this excessive heat that we've had. As we found out last night on the news, July was the hottest month on record, you know, since they've been recording it, ever. And that heat has just been, you know, that sunshine. And then, as Peter said, when you cut your grass short, you really open that crown up to that heat, that intense sunlight. And it's just not good for our cool season grasses. And so, you know, mowing high and watering when you can. But really, in the heat of the summer, we just soon have those cool season grasses go dormant. And then come this fall, they'll start to pick up again.
It's been, last year we had a lot of rain, and then we didn't really have much snow this winter. Is this sort of a cumulative problem in any way with the water? Is it more a matter of what we're getting right now or not getting right now?
Well, you know, that goes all back to the people who are really studying our climate, and they're thinking, you know, climate change and global warming and things like that. And I think it's just something that there we continue to look at. And, you know, I was talking to some other people, and it looks like, you know, our new normal is abnormal. And that's kind of the way our weather has been. We've just really are having some unusual spikes in temperatures and then, you know, rainfall heavy at one period, and then it stops. And unusual.
Yeah, I think, too, I mean, the USDA, was it last year or the year before, changed the planted zone chart, which moved this into a slightly warmer thing. So, I mean, there does seem to be a trend. I mean, it's being debated both scientifically and politically, whether it's global warming or climate change, whatever you want to call it. But there definitely is something going on. But the sort of the mood swings of the climate in the natural world is one thing that's really kind of throwing us.
I guess that part of that question, though, is did the fact that we had such a small amount of snow over the winter affect the, what is it, the water table, or I don't know what you call it, below the...
It doesn't really affect us as much as it does some of the other parts of the country where they, you know, Colorado and up north, we get some, you know, a lot of heavy rains in February and March, and usually we're okay. You do see it when the ponds don't fill up and the rivers aren't, and so that can set off for, if you do follow that with a drought, then obviously you have less of a reserve to draw on. So wells and things like that could be a little bit impacted.
What about trees? It seems that everyone's worried about trees. I know that while we haven't had tons of rain, we have had storms and a lot of wind and a lot of tree damage. I've seen a lot of trees go down. I've had lots of, I would call them much larger than branches, large limbs coming down off the trees. What can you do to protect your trees when the weather doesn't seem like it's the best it could be for a tree?
Well, the shade trees, obviously, in someone's property are very valuable. And so you want to protect those. And to me, a valuable shade tree is something that I would want to expend water on. I probably wouldn't, you know, my lawn might be something that I would hold off on watering. If I had the ability to water, I'd water my most valuable landscape plants first. And that would be certainly my trees. One of what a tree will do when it is drought stressed, it will start to die back. And of course, these limbs, larger limbs, are dying back, and those are very vulnerable in a storm. They will, you know, the winds that we've had, while we haven't had rainfall, we have had some pretty strong winds, and we've seen a lot of tree damage and breakage of dead limbs out of these.
How do you water a tree?
Slowly, because it is a large woody structure, and it's the roots are more lateral than they are deep, and you really have to go out around the drip line of the tree, and that's where you want to slowly trickle water into that root zone. And I usually tell people to use a hose, put your timer on your stove for a couple or an hour or so, and then move that hose around the outside of the drip line. I like to do that in the evening if I can, so that I get less evaporative loss, but it really is critical that you get that water in deeply around the drip line of the tree.
Yeah, I think drip line irrigation is really critical, and if some people are concerned about the end of the hose cutting a rut in the grass or something, there's a little device called a bubbler. It's a diffuser that you screw on the end of your hose, and so it kind of diffuses the water, how it comes out, and helps it saturate into the soil at a slower rate and not create any damage. Another thing we do is we mulch around some of our larger trees to help kind of conserve water. What you don't want to do is to build the mulch up around the trunk of the tree. You know, we spread wood chips out as from the around the trunk all the way out to the drip edge, drip line of the tree, which is the outer leaves, and then but at the point of where the wood chips meet the trunk, there's not even an inch. I mean, it's like just almost bare, because you want to kind of keep those base roots exposed in the trunk so you don't girdle the tree. Another thing is, if you have mature trees, like Dave says, it's an expensive investment. If you think about replacing that tree, you're talking about tens of thousands of dollars. I mean, you really can't.
Years of growth.
Yeah. So what you really, another thing you do is you use a reputable arborist and tree service. And, every several years have the dead wood cut out of a tree. And if you have a tree with a large fork in it, you may want to take off some lateral branches to put less stress on it so you don't end up having the tree split on you in the crotch. But also, even if it's a one vertical trunk, I think that, getting out some of that dead wood for safety purposes so no one gets hit in the head, but then also just to remove some of the weight from the tree can really give you many, many more years.
This question is from Jim, who says, can large oak trees that have lost about a third of their limbs, mostly lower, be saved, or is it too late?
Oh, I think I definitely would look at saving it. We need to keep our oaks around, and I think I definitely, and as Peter said, I'm so glad he mentioned a certified arborist, and really these are professionals, and they are continuing education. They're up on top of these things, and I would certainly consult with one. And there are a number of good ones in our greater Cincinnati area. So look for those, and I think they can help you.
Bill wants to know about the emerald ash tree borer and how deep we are into the infestation and any changes on the prognosis for infected trees or current treatments.
Well, there is a website that you can go to that'll give you a lot of updates on it. And I would, for that kind of information, I would go there, and they can give you up to the minute almost progress reports on where it is. But it is obviously spreading, and there are things, if you've got a very valuable ash tree in your property, I would certainly contact an arborist and have that tree treated. It's not unreasonable, and again, you've got to look at how valuable these trees are. And most of our arborists will not treat a tree that's beyond,
saving.
saving. They'll go ahead and tell you that, maybe you need to have that tree taken out. Your money's better spent doing that than it is trying to treat it. And they will let you know that.
Brandon wants to know, he says, like most of the tri-state area, my lawn is a heavy clay base. In our case, we've suffered severe cracking and splits in the ground in some spots 4 to 5 inches apart. What's the best way to fix and manage this issue, and would it be to fill the cracks in the yard with shredded topsoil or to till up the spots with a rototiller? What should he do?
I would, our lawn grasses should be tough enough to endure the clay soils, and I definitely would not try to amend my lawn soil. Oftentimes when builders come in, they'll leave you with some pretty poor soil to work with, but really our turf grasses should be able to hold up to that. And I would really evaluate the lawn, take a look and see if it's worth trying to save or whether it needs to be redone. And that is the one case where I guess I do recommend that, if you want to restart, you need to treat it with a herbicide, which will knock everything out, a glyphosate product, and then you can reseed into that and reestablish with a drought-tolerant turf type tall fescue, and that's what we recommend. And I know that some people would object to the herbicide, but it's really a clean way to start and get a new grass reestablished into that.
This is Impact Cincinnati and 91.7 WVXU. We're talking about dealing with your lawn, your garden in this time of drought, and we'll continue our discussion in just a moment.
Support for WVXU is made possible in part by Duke Energy, working every day to keep power as simple as a flip of a switch.
Support comes from the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber and Humana. You can learn how companies like Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, Mayfield Clinic, and Priority One Insulation help their employees and their bottom line get healthier with Humana Vitality at cincinnatichamber.com or phone 513-579-3111.
Support for the State House News Bureau stories heard today on WVXU comes from the Ohio Education Association, representing 125,000 teachers, support professionals, and higher education faculty committed to the success of every child, online at ohea.org.
This is Impact Cincinnati and 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking about your lawns and gardens. My guest, neighborhood garden coordinator for the Civic Garden Center of Greater Cincinnati, Peter Huttinger. Also, Campbell County Extension Agent for Horticulture, David Kester. If you have a question, we'd love to do our best to answer it. Impact@WVXU.org or post it on our Facebook page. We talked a lot about the lawns and the trees. Let's move on to the gardens. How are they doing this year, Peter?
You know, like I said, people with smaller plots, and if they're keeping up with watering, they're having fairly good success. But in general, everything's suffering. I think this extreme heat that Dave had mentioned, too, it has an incredible negative impact on the plants, but also on people. Some people just couldn't deal with going out in this 90, well, we're cresting 100 degrees with the heat index, and so they just became frustrated and stopped watering, and weeds took over and became discouraged. So it was a combination of the stress on the plants and people, I think, that people have really struggled with.
Not only my clientele, but I've been suffering that myself. And I got to tell you, my garden is showing the effects of tremendous heat and a lack of effort. So, but we have had in the plants, some of the peppers and the tomatoes, when it got that hot, the blooms just don't pollinate, and so you get less fruit. We saw blossom end rot on tomatoes, you know, where the bottom of the tomato begins to discolor and rot due to calcium, which is related to the water deficiency and an uneven supply of water. So we've seen all those problems. One of the things that I have at home, which I normally don't have, is spider mites. During a dry year such as this, spider mites love to come in, and they just can build up populations on your tomatoes and other vegetable plants to just incredible numbers, and they just discolor them, and you'll lose yield, and honestly, they will take a plant completely down if not treated.
Are you finding less in the farmers markets this year just because of the drought, or are farmers doing a pretty good job of keeping their fields irrigated?
Most of my growers, you know, prepare for this, and they're able to irrigate, and they expect. And matter of fact, some of them have told me they prefer a dry year to a wet year just because they have less disease problems. But, you know, they need a break. But I the farmers markets that I have been to have been well stocked with great produce.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the farmers market, too, there's smaller scale growers, half acre to 5 acres often in production. And so it's much more manageable. And I do agree with Dave, that I think that a wet year is much harder for them to struggle with because then you have a lot of the diseases associated with fungal and bacteria.
This question from RC, I have a huge cottage garden with perennials and annuals. I've read it's not good to fertilize when going through a drought. Since we're having rain today, could this be a good day to fertilize?
Your perennials, sure, and really your annual flowers as well. I like people to go out and fertilize this time of year to kind of, you know, we've probably run out of some nitrogen, and it's a really good time to get on a little bit of fertilizer with a heavy rain and get that, and you'll really extend the season of those flowers and the bloom quality. So I think it's a good time to fertilize those.
I've been ignoring my own plants a little bit. I think the heat, I think I'll go along with your theory that it's hard to get out there and water when it's bad. When it's so hot? What should you do now? I mean, can they be saved? Is there any point to go out there and start watering your flowers again? Or should you just let them go?
You know, if I could forecast the weather, I would I would let you know that. You know, that's what you know, it, sometimes the beginning of the year, if you knew that it was going to be this kind of a summer, you'd just say, well, you know, maybe I'll try again next year. But if you've pampered them and taken care of them all this time, you know, don't give up on them now. We haven't, I'm not aware of any water restrictions throughout the area. So, you know, you want to maximize the use of that water and apply it in the evenings or early morning hours where the evaporative loss isn't. And make sure you're getting it into the root zone and not just, you know, watering the top. I've seen so many people that'll just put their thumb out the end of their hose and they'll just kind of squirt over the top. You've got to get that water into the root zone and make it work for you. Watering the foliage doesn't do it. So get it into the root zone and, you know, hopefully we'll get some cooler and better conditions.
This weekend's going to be cool.
Yes, we'll absolutely.
That. Well, how long does it take? I'm sorry, Peter.
Well, no, I was going to say also is that, you know, with your, whether it be, you know, your annual or perennial flowers or vegetables, if you go in and clean up the plant, you know, cut out any dead material, if they're flowers, deadhead, you know, the flowers, and then to do the focused irrigation on them, I think is, you know, it's worth giving it a shot. Again, you know, I mentioned earlier with the trees using a bubbler, a lot of times instead of just spraying an entire bed, what I'll do is while I'm kind of working the yard, I'll take the hose and kind of move it, put it near the base of different plants and sort of flood the little general area, and that gives you a much more saturated soaking in.
Can you give them too much water at this point?
It would be tough.
It would be, yeah, it'd be hard. You can't overwater
you can.
A plant.
And you want to be careful. And we always, and you know, Peter, we recommend apply heavy but infrequently. So yeah. Water heavily, back off a week, and then and really.
You can go a whole week without watering your perennials and your flowers?
Yeah,
your
if you water them heavily. And then get yourself a very inexpensive rain gauge and measure what Mother Nature provides, and then supplement when needed. So 1 inch of water a week is what we really like to have.
Yeah, and particularly with like tomatoes, you know, or even like cucumbers and stuff, and squash, summer squashes, is that if you bump up a lot of water after really dry, you can cause splitting and different growth pattern abnormalities. And so you want to kind of watch that. So to, you know, have a, you know, kind of a regiment of watering is a good idea.
You talk about the plants that are actually in the ground. What about your big, you know, pots that you have on your deck and those sorts of things? Do those need to be watered more often?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and there are some pots that almost twice a day need to be watered in this. When it was 100 degrees and sun, some of those things had to be watered twice a day. Marianne, people think I'm crazy, and but this is the time of year that fall vegetable gardenings need, those gardens need to be started. And fall transplants are available at a lot of nurseries. And one of, you know, the one that I know that has been carrying fall transplants of cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, and all those is A.J. Ron on Gray Road. And they have been doing it for years, but now other nurseries are picking it up. And if you've had a tough season so far, maybe this fall will be better, and you might want to try a garden this fall of those kind of crops.
What are some of the things that you put in? What would grow in the fall?
Oh, one of my favorites that should be seeded about now is carrots. And I love the short varieties. If you've got a raised bed, that's where you want to put them. But also there are some carrots that will overwinter. So you can get some varieties that'll do that for you. But all your radishes, lettuce, kale, Peter,
cauliflower, broccoli. Yeah, and in fact, some crops like cauliflower and broccoli, you know, they get nipped by the frost, and with the greens too, is that I think that's a superior flavor. And so I really agree. And some of the
frost is a good thing. Is that what you just said?
Yeah,
for these crops,
yeah.
It
really?
Is
not
okay.
A hard, not a hard freeze, mm-hmm. But a frost. Yeah, and I think that another thing that's really you know, critical. I mean, if you have things that are just suffering, and one of the gardens I was talking to Dave. I said I'm just about ready to pull out a row of tomatoes because they're just, you know, struggling so much, and just prepare them for fall crops. And I think that, you know, that's a thing to kind of think about. But, you know, Cincinnati has three seasons. You know, you have early spring, midsummer, then you have the, well, people call them cold crops or your fall crops. And fall crops are really underrated. Another thing you can do with your fall crops, if you do, like, say, different greens, like whether it be mustard or collard or kale, in particular kale, is you, after you harvest the last ones in the fall, you just cut the plants off at ground level and leave the root network in. It's a these plants are biennial. So in the spring, you get what's called sweet greens, or your early crop of greens come up, and you like cut those off really early and harvest them. And those are incredible, your best greens that you'll ever have. So the fall crops are kind of interesting. Some of them will cross over to also an early season.
Now, you can plant those already, or do you need to wait?
No, right about now, next couple of weeks, you want to get those in because you want to get them growing. But don't expect, you know, that your insects are going to take a break. Your fall worms, your cabbage worms, and the loopers, they're all going to be waiting for you to put those out. So you've got to treat for those. And, just think, Marianne, that you could have fresh broccoli for your Thanksgiving dinner. It's possible.
You're making me tempted here. Yeah. I love broccoli.
And with root vegetables like your beets and your turnips, you can also heavy mulch those with straw or put a lightweight row cover over the top of them. As the weather gets cooler, you'll hold them. They won't continue to grow, but it's an old storage technique. Yeah. And another thing to remember as we talk about this, we haven't really talked much about mulching in the vegetable garden or the flower garden. And I think that a bale of straw, depending on where you get it these days, is between $5 and $7. And it goes a long way to use a straw mulch. We did some tests this year at a couple gardens. It made a huge difference in terms of retaining moisture. And the way we talked about, you know, mowing your grass no lower than 3 inches, you know, because it shades the ground. Well, the straw does that too. And when I seed this time of year, I'll put a very light smattering of straw over the top of the bed after I direct sow the seed. And what that does, it allows light and water to penetrate, but it also provides some shade, and it'll really, I think, it supports the germination of the plants.
I have never heard of mulching in a garden.
Oh, vegetable garden?
I always thought it was for decoration. You can see I
don't
plant.
Well, but it's not a hardwood mulch or wood chips.
Well, that's why you're using the straw.
Right. Yeah, straw. Or, you know, some people have shredded leaves. Now, if you're using dried leaves, though, I do want to warn you, if they're whole leaves, they kind of shingle, they layer. And so it'll create a surface that will suppress weeds, but also shed water. So if you use leaf, it should be leaf mold. You know, run the leaves through a shredder. But straw is a good investment.
Another question I didn't get to, and this is sort of going back to what we were talking about earlier from Ken, who says, "What are the steps suggested to kill off a weedy lawn and start over?" You sort of answered that because you sort of expand on exactly what to do.
Okay, what I would do is I would take a look at your yard. If you've decided that it's got to be redone completely, I would spray it with one of the glyphosate products in the next couple of weeks, and then I would make sure you got good coverage with that material. Everything should die out. Then I would mow that very short, collect those clippings. Then I would probably go and rent a slit seeder. And you can rent those at area rental places, and you can they will actually create a furrow into that dead material, and they'll deposit a grass seed into that. And you want to run those several different directions across your yard. Now, we always recommend that you get a soil test so we can tell you if you need to add lime or any kind of fertilizer to that. But once that starts to grow, make sure then that we're, you know, the cooler temperatures are really beneficial to it, but we're also, they've got to be kept moist the whole time. So water, and this is one of the times where we say water more frequently and less deeply, because you've got to keep those grass roots watered and moist all the time. So do that, and then as soon as that new grass needs to be cut, mow it, and don't let it go in the winter long.
We're out of time. It goes so quickly. Thank you both for being here. I know we'll have you back.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. My guests today were Neighborhood Garden Coordinator for the Civic Garden Center of Greater Cincinnati, Peter Huttinger, also from the Campbell County Extension Agent for Horticulture, David Kester. Archives of our programs are available on our website, wvxu.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier.
Support comes from the Murray and Agnes Season Good Good Government Foundation, encouraging citizen participation in public affairs.